What's up? You're listening to Soft Difference, a podcast of Redeemer Presbyterian Church, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. On this pod, you'll hear from Giorgio, Eric, and myself, Justin, talk about 1 Peter and how 1 Peter calls us to love Jesus and love others in the world. Welcome back to the Soft Difference Pod. My name's Justin. I'm one of the pastors here at Redeemer. I'm joined by my Hawaiian pastor friend who definitely knows what tanning bed in the mouth tastes like.
This is ridiculous, first of all, to start, as there's not a Hawaiian in the world has ever been to a tanning bed unless they live in Washington State, going to school or something like that. I'm Giorgio Hyatt, and glad to be here. Next couple weeks, we'll have our other pastor and colleague, Eric, as well. And so we're excited to dig deeper into 1 Peter.
So what we're doing today, Giorgio, is we're kind of like introducing this idea of talking about the previous week's sermon, which I preached. So Giorgio's going to be interviewing me, but we're going to be talking about the previous week's sermon and talking a little bit about how we go about doing this craft. It's a small piece of it. Some weeks it might look different than other weeks, but essentially, we also just want to have a conversation about this text together, and both the preaching of it, as well as the, like, how do we live this out as a community, as Redeemer? And so we're really glad that you're here, and so enjoy joining us in this conversation.
Great. Yeah, I'm excited about this. I re-listened today, and I was struck again. It was my third time because I listened to it twice on Sunday.
Get them likes up.
I got the likes up. All the listens. Yeah. And I loved how you started with a David Bentley Hart quote, and then you did this litany of what it meant to follow Jesus. And so people may, like some people start with an illustration, or some people start with a quote, or some people start with a personal story, or just, hey, everybody, we're doing this hard subject and we need to deal with it. So for this sermon, what was your process like? You made that decision. We can talk about the decision in a bit, but like, what was your process for this sermon?
Yeah. So in general, my sermon writing, has some elements of the same, but I kind of go about it different week to week. I do like to build a sermon around a question or a sticky idea or an illustration that kind of is very much in line with the text or the kind of aim or direction the text is taking us. And so because of what Chris did...
which is also an amazing sermon.
Yeah.
It was great.
Chris did this whole thing about how the first listeners to this wouldn't have had the Christian, like... not baggage isn't the right term, but all the, like, just how much we in the West have informed our Christianity, they wouldn't have any of that as first Christians here in this place. And so I kind of like that idea, kind of flipping kind of our experiential knowledge of what's happening, what's happened to us on its head. And so that's what got me this David Bentley Hart quote, which actually comes from a guy named Jason Maselli, who I think is a phenomenal preacher. He is a writer. This was an article that he wrote for Easter, and so that's where I took the quote. But I thought it'd be an interesting kind of way to start this particular sermon, especially because of the aim of the sermon towards, I think the question I asked is, would we ever truly desire to be the kinds of people that the New Testament describes as fitting the pattern of life in Christ? I just thought that was an interesting way of like engaging with where Peter's going to take us in the book. So that's how I got there.
All right. So back to process. We'll get more into the sermon in a second. But so like really simple questions, because I get asked these kinds of questions. Do you write just about every word out?
I do. I write a full manuscript pretty much every week.
And you take that with you up in the...
I do.
Okay, yeah. All right, in the pulpit. And so what does your sermon look like in a written form on Wednesday?
On Wednesday, it may look like some notes.
All right, like pull out quotes or, something you read or bullet points of your own ideas around the text?
Yeah, so usually it'll be some own ideas as I've thought about the text. And then it'll be wherever I've gotten to by Wednesday, which probably wouldn't be super deep.
You can adjust it to Thursday if you want to.
With commentary notes after reading a commentary, it might be some illustration ideas. And maybe a general, like, kind of flow outline. I'm not really a big points outline person, can be, depending, but it might have a flow of where I want to kind of go by Wednesday or Thursday. Yeah.
And so there's obviously a mulling it over period, which is not on the page necessarily.
Yeah.
So what's that look like for you?
Yeah. So I think about
you just don't know.
Well, it's kind of like when you first start dating a girl and you can't get them out of your head.
Yeah.
And you're thinking about them all the time, and you're thinking about, like, what you're going to say and how you're going to show up. Greg, our friend Greg Thompson, has this amazing sermon he preached about how a sermon is like, a very intimate act.
Absolutely.
A kiss. And so when someone critiques your kissing, you obviously would be very, like, hurt by that. But that's how it feels, because it is so, like, intimate. Like, I'm thinking about this in every sort of way.
And driving also, around at the stoplight. Around,
yeah, like, yeah. It's never far from my mind. And so, like, that process can't be quantified by us. Like, you're thinking about it. And I have this huge trust in the Lord's, kind of like the way the Lord, like, cares about this way more than me, cares about his church way more than me, that he's going to feed me things that I need if I'm paying attention.
Right.
And so part of my prayer is just help me to pay attention and give me what you need. And a lot of that's like illustrative kind of things, but it's also like, you know, things that make the text fit together. And like for the big part, I think for both of us in preaching is like, how is this going to fit to preach it?
Right.
Like, we're not like expositors, like in a MacArthur way, when it comes to a sermon. We're providing a running commentary for you about a text. Like, that's not the kind of expository preaching we're doing. We're actually doing an argument, or we're trying to connect a mood or a tone through the sermon that is very driven by exegesis.
It cares about the words on the page, for sure.
It's expository in that way. It's like bringing the truth of the scripture out, but it's also communicated in a way as a sermon. And so how does these pieces fit together? So for this particular sermon, that was challenging for me. Like, I had preached a sermon on this text in 2014. There was very little from that sermon that
ended up here.
And I think the key, like, component of that for me was this idea of doxology, that Karen Jobes, who's just a great commentator on First Peter.
She's amazing. Ditto on that.
So she talked about this idea of doxology at the beginning that Peter's doing in this text. And that became kind of the frame of reference. So how does the David Bentley Hart quote fit into that? Well, the idea of, if we're praising this salvation that we have, this Christianity that we have, you know, do we really love the words that we're praising, if this is what it's calling us
to? Right. You use the phrase, the power of delight in our salvation.
Yeah.
And so, which is when you brought up, this is the best macaroni and cheese I ever had.
Right.
And then you brought up this ridiculous illustration about the BBC. First of all, what is a BBC? Which is a really important question. The second one is, why would anyone hear you describe it as a tanning bed in your mouth and then want to try it? Now, I did look up BBC, so it's got some, like, caramel in it and some banana.
No caramel.
No? Then I looked up the wrong BBC, so
you can blame Google. Was that the channel, the news channel?
No, it was not the news channel. Nothing banana or frothy would be in the BBC anywhere.
But it's Bailey's.
No, Bailey's, that's what it was.
Banana,
mm-hmm.
And I think cream, I think is what it is. So, like, I had that drink for the first time in the Virgin Islands.
Right, which also sets the stage for how good that drink's going to be. Yes, absolutely. It does.
And I think it's like just, I'm like chocolate banana, and then if you add peanut butter, it's like the trifecta. And so that's what a BBC is. It's a great drink, usually better in the Caribbean than
I would imagine almost everything.
But it's also a drink that Danette loves for me to make her. Oh, she loves BBC as well. So if we have bananas, that's like the typical drink she'll ask for.
Nice.
So tanning bed in the mouth. Yeah. So like, you know, the image of that is, I probably could have said like sunscreen in the mouth, but I just thought tanning bed felt more like, you know, it felt better.
Go ahead.
Get the image of like, you know, that the whole, you know, Hawaii or the Caribbean coming out in your mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a funny
statement. No, it was funny. It was
may
great.
Or may not have been challenged to say it. So that's how we got there.
Yeah. The challenging to say things may be a future topic for us.
Yeah.
Because friends of ours often will do such challenges.
Correct.
And so, of course, being
wordsmiths
and a little competitive, we tend to take those challenges.
Yes, we do.
And then give them right back. Correct. For the next time someone else is speaking. That's right. So totally cool.
So I thought about that Hart's ideas, which are like, yeah, man, this life of Christ is really hard. What's the only way for us to like desire to do this?
And right.
I kept coming back to you that what Peter's getting at is this doxology, this delight in his salvation and delight that these folks who are experiencing tribulation in Asia Minor, this is why you do it. This is why you endure. This is why you continue to follow after Jesus, because the salvation is so good.
Right.
And we should be expressing that. That's part of our witness, which you'll get to in later in the book. But
right.
Like our witness is this delight.
Yeah, and it goes back to the previous episode with Jeff about how joy and suffering are so intimately tied together in 1 Peter, that the suffering has a kind of a power to it because of the joy we have in this indestructible salvation that we have. I love that. And I love the question, who really wants to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a fair question for all of us. And so one of my questions was about, like, you talked about all sorts of different types of oppression. You used a beautiful illustration about Danette's truly awful experience trying to get back to the Carolinas. At one point, we didn't know which Carolina she was going to get back to.
That's right.
And I thought you did a great job of saying, okay, so what does my delight in God and my salvation have to do with these kinds of things?
Mm-hmm.
But you also talked about like empire and both stuff within, stuff without. And so I didn't know if there was anything on the cutting board that you left out, or you, as you think about it all day at the stoplight, like, you know, we live in, when I say empire, everyone, I don't mean any particular national empire. I mean the reign of sin and death, which is a very Pauline, if you remember my Romans sermon series, is that there's a cosmology in the Bible that is the reign of sin and death and the reign of grace and mercy and power. And so how do you see the reign of sin and death, that empire, try to steal or starve out or oppress our life, in our communal witness in this?
Yeah, I mean, I think I shouldn't have to put up with this. Like, I think that's a big part of like my own struggle. Like last night, Danette and I we went and bought a table and chairs. It was on sale, and you know, it was a certain price, and I got the, you know, the taxes, and I'm like, I spent the next like 10 minutes limiting all the taxes that we
Yeah, you're hating taxation. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I shouldn't have to like deal with this. And I think that's a broader thing that we kind of bumper sticker to all different parts of our life.
Right.
And I think that's an empire message, that somehow I shouldn't have to suffer like this. I shouldn't have to deal with this. Like, why is this happening to me?
Right.
Yeah,
it's like I should be able to achieve all my goals and desires on my own without any ramifications in the world. Yeah, totally. Right. That is a Western empire kind of thing.
And the impulse then is to throw my power around to somehow mitigate that suffering, and not doing it for someone else who's actually like in a, you know, position in the margins. I want to throw that weight around for me. And so right. in this situation with Danette, it was like, how can I use my power as a consumer to get what I want? Which was really no way. I was actually utterly powerless, but it felt good.
Yeah, right, right. To throw whatever weight you had around. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so when you think about this church that's suffering these trials, which we're not really given, based on time and history, like most likely their trials were not...
And not to the extent of blood or something that is one of the phrases,
But it was you know, some sort of persecution, certainly some sort of malignment in the public square.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think, again, our temptation as Christians is to then, like, have a hierarchy of trials that we say these trials are, you know, better than other trials.
Right.
And I think what we lose then is we lose some connection to the text when we are not suffering the same type of trials. Now, Jeff was helpful with this in the previous podcast, so if you listened to that when he talked about this. But I did want to, like, kind of relativize some of this, the trials.
Right.
Like, not in a... I think I did say that, you know, certainly there is suffering when you suffer for following Christ, and that does have a certain tonal difference than... suffering.
Yeah, you did a good job on saying. Yeah. I'm not saying this is the worst thing that ever happened to anybody.
But all trials and all tribulations of just being a finite human being in the world, like, we want to throw off our finite human beingness and somehow supersede those trials. And yet, Peter says, no, trials are where you are both most human and most encounter the divine.
Right.
So.
And joy's there to joy's feel there. Doxology is there to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, I love the power of delight in our salvation. I love the. I think it was still David Bentley Hart when you talked about that we're kind of a rabble people, or he talked about that and you kind of riffed on it. And I think it's like, so if I heard you correctly, it's like getting my right and my way is an oppressive empire reality that we have to live with. And what the rabble language was is like that we are getting rid of all attachments to our previous life. Mm-hmm. And you actually, I noted this all three times I've heard the sermon now. You went all and then you went all. And so what are some of these other kind of attachments to a previous life, especially for us in our day and age, like totally understandable in the ancient Near East and what is now Turkey, being actual physical exiles in significant ways, as well as culturally exilic as well. But for us is, I mean, you can talk about any of these things, but, or none of them, but just the busyness and the phone and there's those things. But then there's also like what do we do in our country and all that, you know, like what's going on? How do we even orient towards love of neighbor in those places? So just riff on any of the other all attachments that we have.
Well, I loved how Hart said they lightly cast off their prior loyalties. I think that adjective or adverb. That adverb kind of ties into this soft difference. Like, I think they are not like so violent, aggressive in their cast off that there's a lightness
there's like
to their cast.
A slough off. We don't need any of that independent,
but,
like self.
But he listed religion, empire, nation, tribe, family, safety. So I think
You said safety loud too, by the way. Yeah, you did.
So I think safety for us here, Redeemerites, Winston-Salem people, like, I think that's like a big one for us.
Yeah.
Like,
it's hard too.
It's a hard one. I remember listening to an Irwin McManus sermon. It's one of my favorite sermons I've ever listened to, called The Barbarian Way. He wrote a book on it. Whatever you think about Irwin, whatever. But that sermon, like, really was shifting for me, and that, like, he talked about how his son wanted to jump off the roof and he was like never wanting to do that. And, but when he embraced this barbarian way, like living in the world is dangerous. Like what we pray for all the time is safety. Mm-hmm. And he says, what would it look like for us to pray? Like make us dangerous, you know, in the kingdom.
And courageous. And
yeah. Yeah. So I think that that's like, it kind of hits, like, I think our middle class values, that those were sloughed off, like that notion of safety.
Lightly put away. Put away. Even though it's heavy culturally. Right. You just are like, oh, who cares about that?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. That's good.
But I talked about, you know, family values and that, right. Like the you know, the one of the students that was one of our RUF minister's students, he told this testimony of him, and I talked about that. It's like the family growing up in a different religion kind of household, and like what that meant for him to become a Christian. And like, there was suffering that he experienced for that. And, but we can like talk about this for days on just the tribal identities in our current moment, like that are really part of our past life.
Yeah. We're
like,
attached.
They're part of empire. They're part of living in the life of an empire under the empire, that we have these tribes that we Cowboys are about to play the Eagles tomorrow night.
By the way, Eric, I have two pastor friends that I work with and colleagues all the time, and one is an Eagles fan and one is a Dallas fan, and I am a Panthers fan, proudly, and so I don't usually get to talk a lot of junk to them, but I invited them over to the house on Thursday to see if they wanted to hang out together, and they were both like, no, we're good. Now, they have a great working relationship, but their loyalties are real.
Yeah, what's funny about that, Joe G, is like, I obviously hate, despise the Eagles, have lots of derogatory names to call Eagles, but you know, because Eric's my friend.
Yeah, you got to do something with that.
There is something that has to be done by that. And this is, I don't want to get too far afield with this as an illustration, but like, I do think there's loyalties that we carry with us from our life apart from Jesus, before Jesus, or what the world's trying to squeeze us into, these loyalties, that makes us versus them a much easier posture to take. And like with Eric, like there was a genuine joy that I felt for him when the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
Right.
That, and he's like one of my only Eagle friends.
Right, because we don't try to have many of those. Like,
yeah. But like, because of that, I mean, there was like a legitimate joy, and it softened me towards this posture that I would have normally take. And again, this is like, I know this is like,
it's kind of silly, but yeah, all the Duke Carolina fans understand exactly what you're talking about right now. Like, it's, I was like, we can be about racial reconciliation, but can we get Duke and Carolina people to actually praise Jesus and believe the other one's a Christian? That would be really great.
So casting off like those kind of loyalties, like with a lightness, a sloughing off of them. I mean, I think that all those attachments that we carry, and again, the only thing powerful enough for us is that we believe this is like a bedrock of us for Christianity. The only thing powerful enough to really allow us to do that is Jesus.
That's right.
And what Jesus has done. So
Eric, if you're listening to this podcast, a genuine gladness for you, not for him, but for you that the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
That's right.
Which is really good for you guys, as cynical as you usually are about football, and rightly so. Mm-hmm. But anyway, all right, enough about football. So I think that the other kind of orientation I have that I think is helpful is around inheritance.
Yeah.
Because it's not just joy of what had happened, but being placed into a new, a new category, a new family. Mm. 'Cause it's not just like you're enduring something 'cause God forgave your sins and, you know, but it's this thing, this future hope that, so I'd love for you to riff on that a little bit. I kept thinking about Great Expectations. The book, by the way, is not about hopes. It's about literally an inheritance. Mm. And how the reality that he would have an inheritance would change his life. I mean, it's Charles Dickens, so it's like 850 pages or whatever it is. But it's like just the fact that that inheritance was there shapes the way he orients to the world and the way the world orients towards him.
Yeah.
So I think...
Yeah, that's really good.
Talk a little bit about how you're envisioning the... Because that is this the imperishable passages and things like it's because he does it again later, I think, but here he also does it. It's like, no, I'm going to give you three vocabulary words that make it, and that's by the way a poetic move to just it's like very 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 much, you know. So he's like trying to like throw words at how secure this place we have in Jesus. Because you talked a good bit about Jesus being our inheritance too, but also what that means for how we can sacrifice now. So,
yeah, I mean, I think about, you talked about Great Expositions. We've been watching The Gilded Age, and it's kind of the same kind of deal. Like in the first season, one of the main girl characters got a guy that she likes that's a lawyer. So like when we think about lawyers today, we're like, oh yeah, that's like
it can be all right. It's a good paying job. It's good paying, solid, like that's
You know, upper middle class to upper class kind of like existence. But for like this period of time, that was like
not royalty or
no, it was like a, they're not, you know,
they're our bookkeeper. Nothing wrong with bookkeepers. Bookkeepers are awesome. But in their world, there was like, they just manage our money or something. Or
they're not
affairs.
Old New York.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't have this like inheritance. There's nothing to pass down. And so he ends up like, you know, not being with this girl to be with somebody who came from more means than her, or was more guaranteed an inheritance than her. But I like how you said that. It like changes everything.
Right.
And so I think one of the, like, just thinking about this from a preaching perspective, like, one of the hard parts of preaching this text is that you all have heard tons of sermons about our future glory in heaven. And the very easy, like, path to that is like, well, yeah, that's true, but what difference does it make for me now? Like... And the only kind of the two kind of pieces that like we, you know, that I wanted y'all to leave with, the two realities is your future inheritance and your current possession of Jesus and how they both go.
They're hand in hand. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's, I think, what
Peter's saying. It's not just a theological statement that he's going to wipe every tear from your eye. It actually animates where you are now.
That's right. And because you possess both of those things, it actually... It changes, and I probably could have even teased this part out even better, but what you just said about Great Expectations, it changes your whole outlook on your life. And I emphasize that, like, if you knew you had this trust,
right,
like, how would that shape the current monetary sufferings you had in the moment? Like, it would shape everything. And that's kind of how Peter's using this, is like, because you both possess a future inheritance and you possess Christ, it should reorientate you to your present sufferings.
Right.
Both to endure them.
Yeah, not to just alleviate them.
Yep.
That's right, to endure them well. Because that would be the empire talking.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. And to have joy in spite of them or alongside of them. And I think Jeff, if you listen to the previous podcast, Jeff does a really good job of like talking about how joy and suffering are intertwined. And again, like, I think we could have spent the whole sermon talking just about that for us, but there's going to be lots of more points to talk about.
Yeah, he does that
this.
Again. Yeah, yeah.
But like, how do you, Redeemer, experience your suffering? Is there joy there? And I know for me, it's usually a lot of bitching and moaning. It's frustration. Yeah. It's bucking against the goads. It's like, why?
Yeah, mine's all how to fix the system, because, you know, that's the way I think. Like, how do we fix the system that's causing me or others pain? And you don't necessarily have power to do that. So what does faithfulness look like? And joy in the middle of it. It's real.
Yeah, it's real. And so I think that, like, that would be something for us, like, you know, to this week, to just meditate on, like, how are you currently existing in your sufferings, whatever they are. Again, not to give a hierarchy to your sufferings, like those you're suffering because of Christ or those you're suffering just because you're a finite human being in the world that things happen to and you're an object that gets pushed around and gets bullied by the world, and it causes you pain. Like, what is your orientation to that? And then how might coming back to delighting in your salvation in the midst of your trials cause you to experience a different outlook? Not just like hopefulness, although this is about a living hope.
Right, right.
Right.
But that living part matters. It's not mm-hmm. just an idea.
That's right.
That's right. It's like a participatory hope. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, something that takes over, like from the inside out.
It's
like
that burst out language from early in, yeah. involved. Yeah, yeah.
It's a bursting out of the new from within the old.
Yeah. Well, I don't have
I'd like to just add this about this last part.
Before you do this, well, no, you do this first and I'll go.
So I got someone reached out to me via email from the Sermon on Sunday and was like, hey, I love the Barth quote. So Karl Barth, I shared a Karl Barth quote at the end, which is the following. And I think this is a very shaping quote for us as we go through this series on 1 Peter. It's something we talked about in the intro pod. Georgiana talked about this, but you know, Barth says, faith is the power of God, which gives Christians the perseverance to change things in our world that can be changed. And so that's kind of part one. Like, when we have faith, again, Peter talks about our faith. We didn't see him, and we believed. And we didn't just believe, but we loved him.
Right. Oh, that's... And that's there you go. Like, affections again.
That is idea. That is this beautiful thing about the faith on the backside of Jesus that we have. It is the power of God, but it gives us this perseverance to enter into our world, soft difference, with conviction, to change things that can be changed.
Right.
So, Redeemer, like, we have all sorts of things in Winston, in our church, in our own personal lives that can be changed. And faith is the ability to persevere in bringing change to those places. The second thing Barth says is the courage to not accept those things. I love the double negative, that cannot be changed.
Right.
Like, there are things that we think cannot be changed. And Barth would say, and Peter too, that our faith actually gives us this courage
to not accept
to that. Not accept that.
Not accept that. That's not acceptable. We can't do anything to change it.
Which I talked about. Acceptable. I talked about the raw. You know, raw is one of for those of you who are familiar with our church. The raw is our Run Against Hunger, and we support Second Harvest Food Bank and their work in our city to eliminate hunger. And there is a courage that we must have to accept that people being hungry in our city is not acceptable.
It's not okay.
And that we are running this raw to eliminate the raw, the need for the raw.
That's right.
The last piece of this was, I think, the most important in some ways, the endurance to oppose those things which we cannot accept. And I love the way Barth says this, with the revolutionary patience.
Right.
Like, we, you know, we have some here at Redeemer that you guys are like, you know, Navy SEALs of revolution, and and some who are less that. But I love the way he uses that thing, is like, there is a, it's a revolutionary patience.
Right.
It is a non-anxious way of entering the world, and being opposing those things that we cannot accept.
Yeah, and clear-eyed, deliberate, but it may be a barge going down the Mississippi, not a speedboat. You know what I mean? It's just like, no, this is unacceptable. This is unacceptable. This is unacceptable. I can't do anything about it right now, but it's unacceptable.
And we're two old pastors. Like, no country for old pastors. But in a sense of like there is something that I know 25 years, you know, there's something I know that I didn't know when I was 25.
Right. I hope so.
And my patience for things was much less.
Yeah.
Patience to not just accept those things.
Right.
But a patience to like push in, not accepting those things, but with a patience to continue to roll the boulder up the hill.
Yeah.
Like Sisyphus style. One step at a time,
right.
And change can come as we continue to keep doing it, but patiently doing it, not blowing everything up.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. So I was thankful. My little commentaries is that we started with David Bentley Hart, who is a Greek Orthodox who I disagree with on a zillion things.
Almost everything.
Well,
a lot of things.
We do the creed pretty well together. There's like one phrase we kind of miss each other on. But other than that, the scholar and Christian that he is, has a deep understanding of what a countercultural experience, not for the sake of countercultural, because of having to live in light of the divine, clarifying divine reality of Jesus' return, that is super helpful to read. Wolf, who has written one of his latest books, his book Exclusion and Embrace is in my top 10 books that changed my life.
Yep.
His second to last book, I was like, this isn't that good. And then Karen Jobes, who is an esteemed scholar, but is also female. And the fact that you use those three and still hold to our distinctions that we hold to in terms of our differences, you actually displayed soft difference in that. And I deeply appreciate it, because sometimes you get hashtagged into something that is like, oh, so then that means you believe, you know, and I think you were courageous in that and are regularly courageous in that.
Don't forget Neo-Orthodox Bart.
Neo-Orthodox Bart, which when I got to seminary, when I was in college, he's the one that saved Christianity from liberalism.
That's true.
That's theological liberalism, not political liberalism. And I got to seminary and I heard he was a bad guy. And I was like, wait a second, these both can't be true at the same time.
Right.
So, and Bart. So the fact that you did that, I just really appreciate that, because we just need to be reminded that we're not the only show in town and that this letter is written all across different regions. I know it's Turkey for us now, but nation states didn't work the same way. And there are distinct cultures within a larger culture. And so they had their Barts and their Jobs and their, you know, all those other things. And so it's, I thought that was really, really great. So the last thing I want to say is, hey, look, you got a lot of me asking him questions about things I thought about the sermon, but we actually want this to be you asking questions to whoever's preaching, about your questions about the sermons as well. So please use the resource you're putting out there to help us. Or I'm just going to, when he's preaching, I'm just going to keep pegging him with questions, and he's not going to like that. And then he's going to peg me with questions, and then we're going to be mad at each other, and then we're not going to be able to go to a football game together, and it's just going to go bad. No, just kidding. But yeah, so please, we're not just trying to scratch our itches. We're trying to scratch the itches that you might have too. So please give yourself that resource.
All right. This was a good one. Thanks for joining us. It is fall, y'all. So if you haven't gotten your pumpkin spice lattes or your green chili from Harris Teeter, there's also some green chilies over at Trader Joe's. You can take those. You can roast them. If you buy any of these green chilies, just to, like, they're not all hot. They do add a certain flavor to anything that you might cook or eat. But you roast them on the grill. Get a nice char on the skin of those on both sides. Then you place them in a paper bag, hot. Close that paper bag for 5 to 6 minutes. And then you put them into a plastic freezer bag and put them in the freezer. And then when you're ready to eat them, you peel that nice charred skin off. It gives it a nice flavor, and you cut them up, and then you have green chilies for the rest of the year. This is what we do in the fall in New Mexico. It's like tradition. You go to any store, you smell they have roasters there. You don't have to roast them yourself. And they're out roasting the chilies, and they bag them up for you, and you take them home and you put them in a freezer bag and you eat them all throughout the year. So
you don't know that behind all this is Brian Whippo, who has been like nodding his head and like hearing the idea of roasting green chilies in a way that is just all affirmation. It's one affirmation you don't have to give up, because there'll be green chilies in the new heavens and new earth.
It's not a tanning bed in the mouth, but it's something, right, Bri? All right, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.